Hey everyone, if you are interested in learning about how to become a financial advisor, stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Kiki.
And I'm Kemi.
And you're listening to
Your Advisors Will See You Now, a podcast that will help you to figure out all of your options for life after high school. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Your Advisors Will See You Now. If you are new here, this is our career chat series where we take the time to interview someone in a specific career field or specific niche, specific job that you have asked us to interview about today. So today we are going to discuss financial advising. And who we have on today is Michael Bourdin. He's actually my financial advisor, me and my husband. So we thought that he would be perfect to come on to our podcast and to ask him some questions about how to get into that field. I also knew a little bit about this field because I worked with some finance students in the master's program at Clark University, but you could definitely tell more and give more information than I know that I can. But welcome onto our podcast, and please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background info.
Hi, how's everyone doing today? My name is Michael Bourdin. I work in the finance industry and am a licensed financial advisor. Background, I graduated from Mansfield High School located in southeastern Massachusetts and went on to attend UMass Lowell, where I graduated with a bachelor's degree in criminal justice.
So criminal justice. So talk to me a little bit about that path there. So how did how did you go from criminal justice to financial advisor?
Sure. So during my senior year at UMass, I was presented with an opportunity to intern at a financial advisory practice. And I was interested in the internship because I chose to study criminal justice to begin a career where when I graduated, I'd be helping others on a daily basis and, you know, working in a field where not only where I could create a career for myself, but also help others. And I thought this would be an opportunity to step outside the criminal justice field, still be able to help others. During my internship, I spent a lot of time assisting the advisors, kind of seeing how their day-to-day activities were. And then I also was able to sit in on client meetings to see how they were ran. I got to witness the relationships the advisors had with their clients, and it was interesting to me because I expected it to be very professional, very business-oriented. It was very professional. However, the relationship between the advisors and their clients appeared to be more friendships than just financial discussions and transactions, which was interesting to me because throughout college, I bartended, developed a lot of relationships with, you know, people just from, you know, carrying on conversations from time to time. So it was easy for me to, you know, just meet new people and, you know, find similarities and just carry on conversations. And it appeared to me that these individuals, you know, initially started their relationship because they're looking for financial guidance. However, because financial planning is such a detailed relationship in terms of, you know, what goes on from household to household, from client to client, you know, they kind of let you into their life. And as years progressed, you know, they became, you know, more than just a business relationship. Another aspect of the financial advising industry that I admired was the flexibility the advisors had with the schedules, which allowed them to not only create a successful business, but allowed them to spend more time than other industries would allow with their families. You know, being able to move your schedules around so that they can go to their kids, you know, soccer games or, you know, go to the kids' schools for any type of after school performances they had. Because we basically make our own schedule, you're able to work meetings around what's going on, not only in your life, but your kids' lives. And I thought that was something that as I got older and had a family of my own, it would allow me to not miss out on a lot, which I feel a lot of industries, unfortunately, that's a side effect of the hours that are required.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I like how you spoke to the piece of like flexibility, because we and Kiki have talked about that before in terms of when you're younger, you'll have this one career path in your mind. but you don't really have the wisdom behind maybe how it will apply to your future life or what you want in your future life. So perfect when you're perfectly talking about flexibility for your family. You know, some people don't really understand that piece until they're so deep into their career. And they're like, oh, man, maybe I should have did an alternative route or did something different within that field. So it's really interesting that you found, you knew what you wanted ahead of time and how to pick a career to sculpt around what you wanted so you could have the balance of both worlds. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah. And I think, you know, while I was in college and bartending part time, I got to speak to people from a wide range of industries, and you know, as a bartender, people open up to you more than you would think. So I got kind of an insight as to how other industries, you know, what they required from their professionals. And then as I was able to spend time during this internship to see how all the advisors kind of, you know, they some work nights to allow for afternoons to be available for, you know, 3-4 o'clock soccer games and vice versa. So you know, I thought that was great, and down the road, that would allow me to create a successful business as well as, you know, be present in my kids' lives.
Yeah, no, I think that's amazing. And something I wanted to talk about too is, so can you tell us a little bit about that path? So you took the internship, then what did you do next in order to become a financial advisor? What educational steps did you do next?
Sure. So, you know, there's various ways to get into the financial industry. In regards to financial advising specifically, you can get your foot in the door through an internship. You can reach out to recruiters that some of the investment firms will use to entice someone's interest in our field of work. And then they kind of give you a window of time at which you can complete the licensing requirements. And I'll circle back to that in a moment. Or nowadays, with LinkedIn and social media, you can kind of pick and choose which companies are offering certain roles, and then kind of see if that suits exactly what it is, you know, you're looking for. And circling back to the educational requirements, I work for Ameriprise Financial, a private practice of Ameriprise Financial. So in order to complete the licensing requirements, there's 4 securities exams that I had to pass. The first is the SIE exam, which qualifies you today to then enroll in the Series 7 exam. And then upon passing the Series 7, I took the Series 63 and the Series 66. Those are the exams that allow you to provide the advice around securities. However, my firm takes it a step further because we do sell insurance as well. I then had to go and pass the state's insurance exams for life, health, casualty, and property insurance. So altogether, there are 8 exams that I had to pass in order to hold all of the licensing requirements to become a fully licensed financial advisor. So it was a lengthy process, but I definitely find that it was well worth the time and effort and dedication it took to pass those exams to get to where you need to be to begin this type of career.
And you mentioned before securities. Can you speak to that a little bit? What did you mean by security?
For example, by securities, I meant the ability to buy and sell within the stock market, whether mutual funds, stocks, bonds, et cetera.
Oh, okay. I was like, I'm like, what is that exactly? Okay. Yeah. So I guess can you give me a little more insight about some of these different exams? So I've heard of lately before, I think there's maybe like a risk management that some students will study for, or there might be like a CPA that students study for. Can you just lightly, if you can, talk about these different licensures or different tracks, or if you can't go into depth, kind of speak to, like, is there different areas for each? Because the one that made the perfect sense was you did licensure for, like, insurance. So it's like, okay, we know, like, what insurance is and to study for that. You mentioned a couple of other licenses to study for. Are they broken by, like, topic, or could you speak to a little bit about that?
Yeah, so each exam provides you the requirements for certain aspects of the financial advisory industry. I just wanted to pull up one thing real quick. So to begin, the first was the Series 7. So now the SIE exam is an exam that covers covers the Series 7 material, but not in detail. And what they look for is a passing score in order to make yourself eligible to take the Series 7. The Series 7 the exam that licensed the individual who's taking the exam to sell all types of security products, formerly known as the General Securities Representative Exam. Stockbrokers in the U.S. need to pass this exam to obtain a license to trade. It focuses on investment risk, taxation, equities, and debt instruments, options, retirement plans, and then interactions with clients for prospective securities. It's a very in-depth exam and requires a lot of time and dedication to study. But that was the second exam. The third was the Series 63, which qualifies you as a securities agent. It covers principles and state securities regulations affected by what is called the Uniform Securities Act. So the 7 is a federal exam. The 63 is more focused on state securities. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, the 66 is designed to qualify candidates as both a security agent and an investment advisor representative.
Okay. So wow, that's
so each firm has different requirements in regard to the licenses that they want you to acquire before you can perform the duties on hand. Here at Ameriprise, they require you to be fully licensed from A to Z so that you can provide comprehensive financial advice.
Yeah, that's a lot of licensures. So you don't have to speak to each and every one of them, but could you tell me a little bit about, is there like a certain amount of hours that you need to complete before you go for the licensure, or do you have to sit for like a program then take the license? What's the backing that you need to do before you sit for the license exam?
Sure. So, everybody studies differently. I found that the best material for me was a program that had an online course as well as live tutorials. And then there were quizzes along the way that required a minimum score in order to move on to the next section. And then once you got through all of the material, there were mock exams that you could take. And then a master's exam where they require you to pass by a certain score. I can't recall off the top of my head exactly what that was. But if you score above that level, then that's their green light for you to go ahead and then schedule the time to sit and take the exam.
Okay. So you didn't have to do any kind of, what do they say? Like, you know, doctors have to like complete a certain amount of hours of something beforehand or like.
No.
Nothing like that.
No, I was employed by Ameriprise on a non-advisory level while I was doing my studies. But there's no requirement in terms of dedicated hours within, your investment firm prior to being eligible to take the exam.
Okay. And so did you not have to do, so it sounds like you can do a lot of like self-taught practice through like different online programs or books or courses. So do you necessarily, depending on like what you want to do in finance, do you not necessarily have to go to like a master's program, or do you have to follow, if you go to like a four-year college, do you have to follow a specific path, or is it kind of where you could take any major in order to kind of align to become a financial advisor?
Yeah, there's no like line in the sand in terms of a specific degree, whether it be associates or bachelors that you need to obtain in order to begin taking the licensing requirements. It all basically boils down to finding a firm that will sponsor you to take the exams. And from there, as you pass the exams that each firm requires you to take in order to complete the responsibilities for your role, once you pass those exams, then you move on to whatever that role may be from firm to firm.
I never knew that.
I guess the long-winded answer to you need to be sponsored by an investment firm to take the exam, but there's no requirements regarding the degree at which you would have obtained prior to applying.
That's not bad. So if someone wants to, it sounds like an option if someone, even if they're later on in life, they maybe want to pivot into this career, that it could be a potential option. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've met, you know, a few advisors that have been in the financial industry, in other roles, non-advisory, and then down the road decided that they wanted to take the steps to become an advisor, for whatever the reason may be. And then, like I said, found a firm that's looking to hire, got the sponsorship, and then was eligible to enroll in the exams, once they felt that they had prepared well enough to take the exams.
Hmm. Was it difficult trying to land an internship for while you were in college to a firm?
No, when I was in college, internship to land wasn't necessarily difficult because it was more, the practices were looking for someone to assist with, you know, duties in the office that, are seasonal is a poor term, but, duties that they have that were for 1 month of the year, which just so happens to be winter break. I applied, you know, the flexibility that I had fit the hours that they required from you as the intern. And then you are, you know, you're eligible to kind of see how the day-to-day duties are for everyone within the practice while completing the tasks that they have for you as the intern. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, my practice right now has an intern, from an individual who's on winter break, who's here for a month just to kind of see how, you know, the practice functions day to day. He sits in on each advisor's meetings to see how each advisor, you know, differs from one another. And then there's tasks that he has, to help offset some of the additional, you know, work that we have right now during this time of year.
I love that. And that's something that me and Kiki always talk about on this podcast, is making sure that people get some kind of experience in the field, or getting at least an internship, or that they can shadow, so they can really see the day to day, because, you know, you see things on TV, but they're not exactly what they are, you know, in some aspects. So we always are promoting that and pushing that out for people and our listeners. And this segues perfectly into like the next question I was going to ask, like, what does a day-to-day look like? I know you mentioned different, you know, licensures. So could that look different for people in different licensures? Or could you speak to that? Or you can just speak to what your day looks like on a regular basis.
Yeah, so I've been with Ameriprise solely now for 10 years since I entered the industry. The only other practice I've ever been a part of was the internship. So I can only speak to how our practice operates. Mm-hmm. So for me, as a licensed advisor, my days are very different. I mentioned earlier that the flexibility to, you know, be more present in my kids' lives is a plus. However, it's kind of a catch-22 because all of my clients are, you know, either have young families or just have their own things going on day to day. So it's not uncommon to have have your schedule set for, you know, the week on Monday, and then to have clients kind of call and say, "Hey, this popped up. Can we meet at this time or that time?" So, you know, my job is to be flexible, not only so that I can, you know, have that additional time with my family, but I'm also flexible in terms of, you know, making sure that if something comes up from my clients, that I'm able to meet with them, you know, within a reasonable time and reschedule that meeting. So on a normal day, quote unquote, I meet with anywhere between 3-6 client group. Meetings generally run anywhere from an hour to 2 hours, depending upon if I'm onboarding a new client, then it's a little bit longer because we're going through all the data intake. If it's a client that I've had for a few years and it's just a check-in to make sure nothing's financially has changed significantly since the last time we met, it could be a little bit quicker. Or if I'm meeting with a client that's approaching retirement and they want to run through different scenarios to ensure that they have the green light to retire, then those meetings run a little bit longer. When I'm not running meetings, then I'm working on either, and just for a couple of examples, insurance planning for clients, investment strategies, or I try to meet with as many other financial professionals who I collaborate with to assist either mutual clients or potential referrals based off of what their needs may be.
Could you share a little bit of some of the specifics in some of your meetings? So you can share, like, for example, when our first onboarding meeting, because I know you said data collection. I just want some of our listeners to get like a little more specific ideas of like what that means, because some people are like data and they might not really know specifically what the data
that's collecting. Absolutely. So when I initially meet with a client, we discuss our services. My practice focuses first on financial planning because we feel that it's difficult to advise an individual on how their money should be invested when you don't know everything about their financial life, because maybe investing those funds, isn't the best decision at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So once we determine that moving forward with financial planning is appropriate, then the data intake is an A to Z collection of everything financial in either the individual's life or the couple's. That is anything from personal property that they own, cash, where do they do their banking, what type of retirement assets do they have, if they have children, is their education savings set aside, or are they planning on having children, and we need to discuss the type of education savings that they are planning on beginning once their child's born. Then we look at what their liabilities are. And then lastly, we look at their income, and based off of their income, how much are they saving? Where are they saving into? And what does cash flow look like beyond their current savings?
Mm-hmm.
Once we get through that aspect, then we break down their monthly expenses so that we know, okay, we know you're saving into these retirement plans and these education plans, but outside of your savings, where does your income go? Because we're going to try to model the same lifestyle that they're living pre-retirement in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So by identifying what their monthly spending is, we're able to project 20, 30 years out what their income needs will be, so that when they retire, they don't have to change the way that they've been living their life for the previous 30 years because their income is significantly different now that they're not working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You also mentioned before getting a license for something to do with stocks. Now, what can you share a little bit about what a financial advisor may have to do with that piece? Because I think, you know, sometimes when people hear finance or financial advisor, maybe they think Wolf of Wall Street, and that's not necessarily the case. Could you clarify a little bit of what that is or what that looks like in your job?
Sure. So once we have all the data and we have a plan created for each client, everybody's different. So one of the next steps is to look at what their investment situation is. Do they have a 401k, a 403b, which are active employer savings plans? Do they have excess cash beyond what their cash reserve should be that we could possibly invest in the stock market to try to achieve a higher return than what they're currently receiving in a checking or savings account? And that's where the stocks and bonds come into play. There's a trading platform that we use where, depending upon each client's specific scenario, you know, we identify an investment that that's appropriate and that they're comfortable with. And then as the advisor, we can place those investments on their behalf on our platform. And then, you know, we monitor those investments at each meeting to make sure that we're on track for the goals that they're earmarked for, et cetera.
What skills do you think are needed for this particular career? If you were to talk to someone, you had a conversation with them, you're like, yeah, like this person would be a really great financial advisor. What do you think are the skills that would make someone do well in this role?
Personally, I found that having a passion for interacting with people and helping them reach their financial goals is what you need to succeed. You know, being somebody who can sit down with somebody that they've never met before and understand that, you know, you're asking them some of the most private questions that, you know, most people in their life don't know. So you have to be able to, you know, be patient and understand that you know, it's going to take some time to develop a relationship to have that understanding of one another. But, you know, my role is to act on the best interests of all my clients. And that's what I want, you know, all my clients to understand from the first time I sit down with them. And if we work 20 years together, you know, I want them to know that any advice that I'm giving them is in their best interest. And, you know, I found that through sitting in back when I was an intern, and then the years working for Ameriprise prior to being an advisor, you know, just being able to, you know, welcome people in, and, you know, just be very understanding of, you know, how everybody's different. Everybody has different goals, whether they're short term or long term. And at the end of the day, just being able to, you know, speak to these people as if, you know, you may have known them forever, and create that level of comfortability where, you know, this relationship isn't just, you know, a 1 year relationship. The intent is ongoing, so that we can work towards whatever goals they may have year after year, and help each client reach those goals.
Yeah, it sounds like you definitely need a fair amount of like interpersonal skills to work.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, customer service, communication skills, I find to be very important. And then just the ability to, you know, understand that everything's not going to, you know, get determined the first time you sit down with somebody. You know, it's going to take, you know, a few meetings to kind of get all the information that you need in order to create the plan for each individual person or couple. So being able to, you know, be available, you know, with today's technology, every advisor is different. But, you know, for me personally, I find that having emails go to your phone, being able to, you know, work from a PC remotely and be able to, you know, just provide the service to your clients in a timely manner, you know, it's a very unique service that we provide. Whereas, you know, some industries, you know, they're not available after 5 o'clock, or they're not available on a Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm. In addition to like, to the many soft skills that you need for this position, I was thinking of hard skills. Now, economics and statistics comes to mind. How great do you have to be of a person to deal in that area? If you were speaking to someone who is wondering if they should be a financial advisor, and they're like, how about that economics and statistics? How much is in there? How much of a savant do I need to be? What would you say?
It's more or less just, it's not so much, you know, like what you learn in those types of courses throughout your, you know, whether it's high school education, college education, or beyond. It's more or less understanding how the economy is changing, what's going on, not only domestically, but internationally. You know, staying on top of your continuing education, you know, that's something that I find very important. You know, there's constant courses I'm taking throughout the year to stay on top of, whether it's, you know, the evolving technology or the new products that are available. You know, your firm will provide you with that education so that you don't fall behind as the industry evolves. So it's not so much, oh, I took an economics class statistics class, and I really enjoy numbers. The numbers are a large part of financial advising, but it's also, you know, a very personal business where, you know, you're watching all different types of aspects of what's going on, not only for your client and their personal lives, but as a, you know, as a world, as a U.S. economy, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even just trying to clarify again, like the educational path. So I think that's just a magnificent way that you can get under a firm's wing, and then they can kind of like serve as like a mentor towards you, and then you could take your licensure. I think that's an amazing way. I didn't even know that was a way. The other way that I knew about was like students going to a master's program for finance, and then they would take some courses that would prep them for like the CFA, whatever have you. So it's good to hear that there's these other ways to get into this field versus like one strict path? For is there at least a minimum requirement to have like an associate's degree or have a bachelor degree?
That all varies from firm to firm. There are courses you can take in college that will, you know, upon completion of the course, they'll prepare you to take the Series 7 or they'll prepare you to take a certain licensing exam. However, that would be more or less for the individual who, you know, is in college and has that mindset of, yes, that's the route that I want to go. For the person who goes to, you know, your everyday university and is not sure of what they want to do, not sure the career path that they want to go down, or thinks that, like for myself, criminal justice is the way I want to go. And then you're presented with an opportunity down the road that kind of opens your eyes to an avenue that you otherwise weren't thinking of. Then you have the route that I took to get you to where you need to be so that you can begin your career.
Yeah, and it's more common than people think for you to start on one path and then you're pivoting to another path. That's what we've definitely found during these career series of, it's been many people that were in one major and then they end up switching to another. When we compare like the data, I think there was more, the higher percentage of people that were on the show were on a different major and pivoted to something else. The other question that I was going to ask in terms of a financial advisor, this has been so enlightening, this period, because I really didn't consider that it could be such a pivotal career if someone was interested in it. What would you say are some of the highlights and some of the challenges of being a financial advisor?
So the highlight, like I've mentioned before, is just the relationship I've created with my clients. I mean, they're has been multiple times where I've been out in the area, you know, with the kids, you know, doing one thing or another, and I bump into a client and it's like, oh my God, you know, so good to see you. How you been? So, you know, so nice to be able to, you know, to meet your kids. Like just having the ability to create those relationships in my career, I think is such a benefit. I mean, even my wife's a nurse and she says all the time, if, you know, we're out when I bump into somebody, she's like, it's amazing that you're able to create that type of relationship, you know, through your business. Because more often than not, the meetings, you know, consist of catching up with what's going on, not only with, you know, my clients' lives, but with mine. And then they're like, okay, all right, let's get into nitty gritty and discuss our finances. It's rewarding because, you know, there have been meetings where I've sat down with a family and their child who's, you know, trying to determine what school to go to. And we're discussing all the, you know, varying ranges of tuition. And then they, you know, they choose to go to school A. And then, you know, 4 years down the road, you know, I'm talking to them and their child graduated. And we're talking about, okay, now that, you know, John's through school, let's focus on retiring. And just, you know, being able to witness the joy that the clients have as they're reaching their goals and not necessarily always their kids and graduating from college, but it could be something as simple as, you know, my parents and I used to always travel to, you know, this lake as a child. And, you know, one of my goals was always to, you know, buy a second property on that lake so that my kids can kind of experience the same types of experiences that I had. And then watching them, you know, set a savings goal, reach that goal, you know, purchase the house. And the next thing you know, a client will, you know, email me a picture of, you know, either the property or, you know, a gathering they had. And they're like, you know, thank you so much for assisting with, you know, us to reach that goal. And it's times like that where it's, you know, it's a rewarding industry.
Yeah. Any challenges that you have in this industry?
I would say one of the challenges and obstacles is you're constantly trying to focus on business development. You know, any chance, like I mentioned earlier, when I'm not running meetings or working on individual plans for clients, I'm always trying to network with other financial professionals, like you had mentioned earlier, a CPA. You know, there's a lot of crisscrossing of between, you know, what an accountant does for an individual and what a financial advisor does for an individual. So there's CPAs that we network with where if I think my client, you know, could benefit from some tax advice, you know, I refer them to the CPA. And then if the CPA is working with a client who they think needs to clean up, for example, old 401ks to kind of consolidate to bring everything together so that it's easier to manage. Then they connect me with that client and we see if it's a good fit, et cetera. So you're just always trying to grow your network, which can be difficult because, everybody is so busy and the financial advising field has much more advisors retiring than entering the field.
Really?
So it's just one of those things where I'm constantly trying to meet other financial professionals so that they know that, I'm a young financial advisor looking to grow the business in any way that I can and welcoming new clients in whatever facet.
So listeners, if you heard that, there's some older financial advisors retiring. There's a need for you. So if you have any questions, listen on this podcast or reach out to Michael.
Jump on LinkedIn and type in financial advisor and you'll see job postings across the board through, whether they're private advisory firms or some of the larger firms that you hear day to day, whether it's commercials on television or, management companies of 401ks, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the other question that I had, my last kind of education question. So for some of these studying for these license exams, how long could that take? Can some of them take as long as, how you have some lawyers studying for the bar and it takes like a year to prep for that? Is some of the licenses that rigorous?
Series 7 is a comparable exam to the bar exam.
Wow.
In terms of the amount of material that they can test you on. Mm-hmm. So it varies from person to person, depending upon the amount of time they have to dedicate to studying. There are people who have the flexibility to dedicate 8 to 10 hours a day and make it their job to study and can take the exam after a month. And there are people that, just have a lot more going on that can only dedicate 2 to 3 hours a day and then in return take a little bit longer. Thinking back to when I took it, I want to say it took me close to a year just because, I was studying and working and just had a lot on my plate. So for any, young professional who is interested in this industry, definitely starting your studies before you have quote unquote adult responsibilities, it definitely puts you ahead of the game and allow you to, acquire the licenses before, you're just so much busier.
Hmm. Any other words of advice that you would give to someone who's looking to enter or pivot in, who is questioning possibly pivoting into this career, or if they're like a high schooler that is maybe thinking to themselves, yeah, I want to be a financial advisor. Is there any other advice that you would give or you could think of?
I would say that if you're in high school or if you're in college, definitely, take a ride around your local town. You'll find financial advising, financial planning practices, and just give them a call and, just explain to them that you're interested in their business and that line of work and you want to bounce some questions off of them. Depending upon your age, if you're 18 or older and looking for internships, they're not always necessarily posted. For example, the intern we have right now, there was no internship posting. It was somebody who just reached out and said, hey, I don't know if you guys hire interns or if you have any type of internships where I can just shadow the business and see how it functions. And, ended up working out. So just don't be shy, stick your neck out there. And I would be willing to bet that, there's advisors that will take the call to talk. I know if someone called our practice and, had a question for advisors about how the business works and, if they could come in and just bounce some questions off us, we'd be happy to take that meeting because you never know how the relationship could evolve down the road. I can speak from personal experience that the practice I ended up working for, similar situation. I knew somebody that worked for the practice. I was presented with an opportunity at another investment firm that I knew nothing about. So I reached out to the individual who worked at Ameriprise and asked if I could just ask them some questions. I ended up not taking the job offer. And then a year later, the owner of my practice reached out and asked if I was interested in pursuing a career with his practice. And here I am 10 years later.
So you hear that, guys? Shoot your shot. Ask questions, self-advocate, get yourself out there. You know, try to make those connections, and you never know what could be in store for you. Michael, thank you so much for allowing me to interview you on our podcast. Do you have any social media or any way that people can contact you, whether they want insight from Ameriprise or maybe they're a young adult looking for some insight? Do you have any information or contact information that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I can be reached on LinkedIn. You can just type my name in, it'll pop right up. And then feel free to, you know, shoot me a message, and I try to check it, you know, every other day, and I'll get back to you in a timely manner.
Perfect. Thank you, everyone, for listening into this episode. Excuse me, it's that time of year. If you have any other requests for different careers that you'd like us to interview, please make sure to send us an email. Follow our social media, our Facebook, our TikTok at Yawson Podcast. And until then, we will see you in the next one. See you. Bye. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to the latest episode of Your Advisors Will See You Now. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media pages and check out our website. Take a look at the show notes below.
And please make sure to subscribe and share this podcast. Also, show us some love and please leave a 5-star review. Catch you next time.
See ya.